You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming out and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald.
And I'm Darren.
And we are here today to discuss a actor profile, actually, a character profile here on one Mr. Wesley Snipes.
Oh, this is really exciting stuff. I mean, you know, I got to be honest, I've been a Wesley Snipes fan since I was about 10, 11 years old. I think that he is one of the best, as I would call him, second generation action stars. So like, for the audience, a first-generation action star to me is like a Chuck Norris, a Schwarzenegger, a Stallone, mostly through the late 70s into the 80s. And Wesley Snipes kind of started his action film career in the early 90s. So as far as like kind of second-generation action film stars, he's definitely one of the best and one of my personal favorites.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great actor, and he's left you know, quite an impact, and still is in the acting world. But let's dive in a little bit on him. He was born in 1962, and that was in Florida, is where he was born. And I think he was like 8 years old, 8 or 9, I believe, when they moved from Florida to New York. That's where he attended school there for a little bit. He grew up in Bronx, New York. He went to high school in New York, LaGuardia High School of Music and Arts, I believe is what it was called, something along those lines. He didn't get to finish. He actually had to go back to Florida, but then he came back after he graduated high school in Orlando. He returned to New York and attended the State University of New York at Purchase. And he also attended the Southwest College in Los Angeles, California. So he's a well-educated man as far as his schooling and stuff. And he segued that into a pretty hefty acting career. I think he was 23 when he was discovered by an agent while he was performing in a competition. And then later that year, I believe, he made his film debut in Wildcats, which is the 1986 Goldie Hawn starring vehicle.
Yes, where, she's a football coach, right?
Yes, yes, she plays a female football coach of a men's football team, which is one of those 80s novelty things that they loved to do back then.
Right, and what's kind of interesting is, so a little inside baseball for our audience. Donald and I kind of separate sections of what we're going to cover each time that we do a podcast like this. And being that you were covering his history and his background, I honestly didn't peek into any of it. But I want to tell you that it makes a lot of sense. And the reason I say that is if you watch a film of his like New Jack City, he is a little too comfortable in the New York City kind of mold that he plays, that character that he plays in that movie. He's got a very thick kind of New York accent, so it obviously doesn't shock me one bit to know he spent a substantial amount of time in New York, because he has all of the gestures, he has the right accent for it, and obviously, I think of going to the school that you had mentioned, he actually is a tremendously talented martial artist, which requires a lot of dance skill, as well as a lot of acting skill as well. So none of this surprises me.
Yeah, he segued some of that skill, that dancing skill, I would imagine, in because he was trained in capoeira as well.
Ooh.
So, yeah, he has some background in that. He has some background in kung fu, jiu-jitsu, kickboxing. He's a fifth-degree black belt in Shotokan karate and a second-degree black belt in hapkido. So the man has some experience. He's an overall badass, I will say.
Well, funny, you should mention that. So I used to take Hapkido, and one of the things that maybe, unless you're more familiar with the martial arts, you may not know about Hapkido, is part of your training involves, when you move up a belt, in theory, this is what you're supposed to do. If you move up a belt in Hapkido, you have to also move up a belt in Taekwondo. So when I watch a lot of his action sequences, I can see the Taekwondo style all over his fight scenes. So that actually doesn't surprise me one bit. And that's a tidbit for those of you who may not be as familiar with Korean martial arts, how he developed those Taekwondo skills.
Yeah, that's actually quite fascinating. Did you know in 2005, he was in negotiations to fight Joe Rogan on an Ultimate Fighting match?
I had no idea.
I didn't know that either. I looked that up. I was like, oh my God. Like, that would have actually been amazing to see.
It would, because I would honestly have a hard time calling that matchup, because Wesley obviously has some jiu-jitsu background, but a little known fact about Joe Rogan, he's a really thick guy. And with all of his time he spent in the UFC, he's actually a very well-trained mixed martial artist. And truth be told, you know, Wesley is about 5'9", 5'10", and Rogan is like 5'8", 5'9"-ish. So it would actually be like a super competitive fight. I don't know who I'd pick.
Yeah. I mean, I probably would pick Rogan just based on endurance. But, you know, that would be tough. I could see it going either way, to be honest. I think that they should definitely think about doing it. So you heard it here, folks. We want Wesley Snipes and Joe Rogan to fight. So Joe Rogan, from one podcaster to another, best of luck to you, sir. Hey, look, if you do fight Wesley Snipes.
Hey man, Joe Rogan wants to host a presidential debate. Why not a fight? A friendly fight, of course, between he and Wesley Snipes.
Right. Yeah. They could do that before or after the presidential debate. It doesn't matter to me.
It really doesn't. No.
During. They could do it during, too. I'm cool with it. I might actually watch a presidential debate then. it could be fun.
I'm here for the laughs. Yep. So is there anything else in his background that you think is like really kind of fascinating?
Well, he did. I didn't know, but he was in an episode of Miami Vice back in '86 as well. And he played a drug dealing pimp in an episode that they called Streetwise. And another funny thing was that also I had no clue that he was considered for the role of Geordi LaForge in Star Trek: The Next Generation. But the role went to LeVar Burton instead. So he actually lost the role to LeVar Burton.
Wow, that's some serious like Trekkie trivia right there. You know, a little known fact, and we'll dive into this in a little bit, but a little known fact about Wesley Snipes, what makes him such a good action star to me is that he's a very well-trained and versatile actor. It doesn't surprise me to hear him maybe read dramatically very well for, you know, the LaForge role. I mean, if you see a small film called The Water Dance with Helen Hunt, where he plays a mental patient, he's actually tremendously talented as a dramatic actor. You just don't really see much of his work.
Yeah, it's usually action or comedy is what he tends to dive heavily into, to be honest. There's not, once you get pigeonholed in something, particularly as an action star, you know, he was in the late 80s and all through the 90s. He really got labeled, you know, really got pigeonholed there for his action capabilities, which, you know, looking at his background, you would think, yes, that makes sense. But he was actually quite funny, too. So he's very versatile. And I could definitely see him doing more dramas down the line and, you know, finding something that carried some depth and some heft to it that he could really parlay into, you know, could be heading into Academy time. You know, if Jim Carrey can parlay his career into Academy Award nominations, and Adam Sandler can do that, then I am quite confident that Wesley Snipes could do the same.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I had a word with one of his drivers, actually, who would, you know, drive him to special events and things of that nature. And he spoke very highly of Wesley, not only as a person, but as an employer, And that's just kind of stuff you always like to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of things here early in his career. He turned down a small role in Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. Now, Snipes actually got noticed by Spike because he was in the Michael Jackson music video Bad.
Ooh.
And I believe it was, I want to say it was Martin Scorsese. Yes, it was Martin Scorsese that directed that music video Bad. And he appeared in that, and that caught Spike Lee's eye. So Spike Lee was like, hey, I want you to be in Let's Do the Right Thing, or Do the Right Thing. And he declined it because he got offered a larger role playing none other than Willie Mays Hayes in Major League.
So, Donald, as you know, we all, when we do these spotlights, we do like to talk about what in this one specifically, the most underrated, best and worst films of the actor. Is Major League anywhere in your list?
It's up there pretty high on one of my favorites for him. The only thing is it's such a ensemble cast. No one has that all the moments to shine as much as you would like. So it's a good movie overall, but I would give credit to the ensemble and not the individual, if that makes sense.
Well, you know, when I was younger, it took me a couple years to realize Wesley was actually in Major League because I'm used to seeing Passenger 57 Wesley Snipes or White Men Can't Jump Wesley Snipes. And I actually, for a couple years, had either forgotten as a kid or didn't even know he was in that because, I mean, once again, he's very talented. And when you think of action stars from that era, you don't think of versatility. You think of iconic image, you know, like Schwarzenegger, of course, can do comedy, but he always looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I feel like Willie Mays Hayes blended in a little bit to me there. And I give him a lot of credit for that. And of course, you know, I love that line where he says, you know, I run like Hayes and I hit like Mays. And he's like, well, you may run like Hayes, but you hit like shit.
Yeah, there was a great film, and it made it even sweeter that it was about the Cleveland Indians, and us both actually coming from Ohio. I was and still am a huge Indians fan, so it was nice to see our team represented on the big screen.
I agree with you, and although I did find out years later, I was slightly disappointed at the fact that all of the baseball stadium scenes were actually shot in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bit of a downer, but, you know, I guess they were looking for a particular aesthetic, and Cleveland just didn't have it.
Well, you also got Bob Uecker out of it, because Bob Uecker famously called a bunch of Milwaukee games.
Yeah. Yeah, having Bob Uecker in that was great. And he was great in, what was it, Mr. Belvedere?
Bob, I don't remember if it was Mr. Belvedere, but Bob Uecker is just a classic baseball personality.
Yeah, he acted in multiple seasons of Mr. Belvedere. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that was him in there.
Yeah.
But Lee himself, after Major League, he was cast with Snipes. Wesley Snipes was cast with by Spike Lee, and that was for the jazz saxophonist Shadow Henderson in the film Mo Better Blues. And as the lead later in the movie Jungle Fever.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. That's yep. Kind of a classic movie there.
Yep. And then later he played drug lord Nino Brown in New Jack City, which, by the way, was written specifically for him by Barry Michael Cooper.
You know, that's an iconic performance from Wesley Snipes. Now, I've watched about half of it about a month ago. It is definitely a little dated by this point, in many respects, but his performance is cherry, my friend. Very iconic, very memorable. That will go down as one of his three most well-known roles.
Well, I think there will be four well-known roles, and the fourth one would be Wesley Snipes' Tax Evader.
We didn't have to go there.
Yeah, it's a big part though of his story because it put him away for 3 years for tax evasion. He was in jail and he could not participate in filming while he was in prison, And even after prison, he could not leave the country for a certain, I don't know how long, but a certain amount of time he could not leave the country. So it really restricted the amount of roles and what roles he could play. Like, he wanted to be in, what's the films, with Sylvester Stallone and Arnold and Bruce Willis and all those guys. The what? I'm sorry?
The Expendables.
That's right. The Expendables. He was going to be in the Expendables earlier on, but didn't get to be in it until the third, because they were filming parts that they needed him for in another country, and they would not let him leave the U.S. So he got kind of and he was only able to do certain roles in certain films that were filming within the United States. So that's a big part of his career. So it's something that we definitely had to bring up. But going back to some of his other roles, you know, we see U.S. Marshals, Rising Sun. A classic would be like White Men Can't Jump. A very memorable Odd Duck would be Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. Quite the title. A little too long if you ask me, but hey, you know, whatever works.
Well, if I can drill down a little here, because you're potentially stealing some of my material that I wanted to go through here. So I want to jump into my opinion, his worst film, and then I'd love to ask yours. Okay. So for me, it's Rising Sun. Now, the way that I grade this is the fact that I could obviously go to like his straight to streaming or straight to video, you know, films and maybe critique them. But Rising Sun was a massive release. And Sean Connery was essentially like plays this character where he kind of knows everything that's going to happen. So logically, I ask myself, if you know everything that's going to happen, you know, why aren't you just telling us? Why are we even watching this? Like, it's kind of silly to me. Like, that film, I was highly disappointed at it as a Wesley Snipes and a Michael Crichton fan, for that matter. And there was like a string of films in the early 90s that were very similar to this. Disclosure comes to mind, which is The Firm, which is a solid film. A Few Good Men, you know, these kind of like suspense dramas. And this one is just such a dud to me on so many levels. And to be honest, it's rather pornographic, too, which is kind of a slight turnoff for me for an action film.
I haven't seen it in so long, to be honest. I couldn't give it my full opinion, but it was easily forgettable for me, I will say. I don't remember much about it to even comment on whether I enjoyed it or did not. but I do remember one in particular that I could not stand, and it was another baseball film, and I think you probably know where I'm headed on this. It was a Tony Scott directed film from 1996 called The Fan.
Bobby, come on, Bobby.
Yeah, Robert De Niro, who's the villain of the film, so to speak, the antagonist of the film, he plays Gil Renard, a hunting knife salesman. Yes, apparently those were quite popular in 1996. Hunting knife salesman. And he became obsessed with Wesley Snipes' character, Bobby Rayburn, who was apparently an amazing baseball player. And he moved to go play on a new team. And I think it was the Giants, I want to say.
Yeah. Yes.
He went to go play with the Giants. And this became his worst year of his entire career. And Robert De Niro's character, Gil, was such a fan. He would do anything to improve his character, like his career, and help out his boy, Bobby. So he started to go further and further into, boy, it got dark. He would like threaten him, threatened his family. I think he has a wife or his girlfriend at the time that he was going to murder if he didn't hit so many home runs. Just some really kind of kooky, crazy stuff. And to be honest, there was nothing new that was brought to the table here. It was very vanilla as far as the story is concerned. There wasn't anything different when you're, there's been these types of films over and over and over and over again that we've seen and that we've heard of, where an obsessed fan goes after the person that they are obsessing over, and it ends in tragedy. You know, it's a time, age old tale. It's just tired. And this did not add any layers to that tired ass story. So that was my least favorite of his career, as far as like memorable films that I could think of that I've seen. And then I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, no, not for me.
See, this movie frustrates me because I feel like it does certain things right, and then it completely falls flat. So when you're making in many areas, it really ruin it. When you think of as a filmmaker, I know when you're trying to tell a story through your films, you're thinking very carefully about the tone you want. You're thinking very carefully about, man, I want a complex character. If I have a complex character, people will like it. If I have a cool story, people will like it. But it just because you know what it needs doesn't mean that it's going to end up good. I think they spent so much time making Robert De Niro's detestable character so complex that you kind of felt something for him. And it didn't work for me the first half of the movie. In the second half of the movie, he went Looney Tunes. And I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. You know, and it's the same thing. Big fan with the guy who's on King of Queens, not Kevin James's, but Patton Oswalt,
yeah.
Yeah, as a Giants fan, I watched that movie, and that's another one that it's a little too bizarre for my taste. I'm not into this.
Yeah, these types of films, they'll come out every so often. About every 5 years, you'll get a film like this, and they're quite easily forgettable. So, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, your favorite, of course, of this genre is Swim Fan with Erica Christensen. But anyway,
I don't even know. What that is. Was that English, what you just said?
No, it's called Swim Fan. But anyway, so what in your mind is there, I came up with an underrated kind of Wesley Snipes movie, and I was wondering if you had one as well that you would like to share, because this one I wanted to spend a little time on.
Well, as far as just like what I thought was underrated, I think that his role in Dolomite Is My Name really got overshadowed by Eddie Murphy's character playing Dolomite.
Yeah.
And he played D'Urville Martin, or D'Urville Martin, I think is his name. And he played that, and he was a relatively popular actor that Eddie Murphy's character Dolomite wanted in his film, and the only way he could get him in the film as an actor is if he also let him direct. So it was funny seeing this guy's ego take hold in the filming of this film, and how low budget the film was, and the fact that he wanted it to be this in like this huge classic amazing film, and just watching his frustration with the filming hit home with me, because, and probably I would imagine it would resonate with you as well, Darren, having worked on multiple low budget films and seeing the things that are going wrong and the frustration that comes forth from that. I just felt that was hugely underrated as far as his role in this film.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally hear you. And I know when that film was filming out here, like there was a lot of buzz around it, and Wesley was a big part of that. For me, for underrated film, I'm going to go with Drop Zone. I think Drop Zone is one of these really fun action films from that era that completely gets overlooked. It came out the same year as True Lies. You know, so naturally, I just think underrated director, underrated actor. But anyway, we should move on here due to time constraints and jump into probably his biggest franchise, and that would be Blade.
Yeah. Yeah. Blade really broke the mold for Wesley. It was his hugest hit. $150 million worldwide is what this film raked in, which was a massive success for a New Line Cinema and a Marvel Comics property. It proved that not only that a African-American character could succeed in comic book world in the box office, but also that a comic book character could succeed in the box office that isn't Superman or Batman. it was something different. It was something that we needed as fans, in that the movie industry needed to prove that they could do things like this and take smaller characters and run with them. The whole Marvel base was built on this. Iron Man was nothing until the 2008 film. I mean, and now everyone knows who Iron Man is. Before that, he was just one of the characters in a comic book, albeit a regularly popular character in the comic book. He was part of the Avengers, for God's sakes, but not a relatively well-known worldwide like Superman or Batman. So it was really great to see this film come out in that it was so hugely successful.
Yeah, what's interesting to me too is I know that people who are in the vampire world, you obviously have people that are huge vampire movie fans. This movie really really goes against a lot of conventions. Granted, it's based off of a comic, but like it really goes against a lot of conventions, and I was highly skeptical that it wouldn't work. Because, you know, just the idea of creating a Daywalker, even though their logic is pretty sound, it's just far-fetched for people that are used to a certain thing in vampire stories. But what this movie for me, because I watched it when I was 16 years old, what this movie really kind of did for me is it made me believe that you could really blend the action and the horror genres perfectly together.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Norrington, the director, gets a lot of credit for that. I feel bad that he hasn't directed more films because, I mean, Blade obviously doesn't blow you away, but it blew me away in the sense of watching them merge those two things together and making it fun, but making you still take it somewhat seriously, which is ultimately what I think you need to do with that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. They did Blade, the first Blade, then of course the first Blade was so successful, they did a second one, directed by none other than Guillermo del Toro, which was quite fascinating. Brought in a stellar cast for that second film, and then led into a third and final film, which ended up being directed by the scriptwriter of the franchise, David Goyer. Now, Snipes and Goyer famously did not get along at all during the filming of the third one, so much so that Patton Oswalt actually was part of that set and that production, and he actually talks about that and says that Wesley was very, very combative on set, and when he was barely on set, he was only on set for close-ups, and otherwise he was in his trailer the whole time. He said smoking weed, and at one point, he came out on set, and there was another black man on the set, an extra, and he was wearing a shirt that he brought with him that said garbage on it. And Wesley lost his shit when he saw that. He said something along the lines of, there's one other black man on set, and you make him wear a shirt that says he's garbage? And apparently, that did not go over well with him. I can see how that could be frustrating. You know, I totally could see that with Wesley, you know, being upset by that, but not to the point of strangulation when it comes to the director. So maybe there was a few hotheads on set that needed to cool off, and leveler heads needed to prevail. But that's just an interesting tidbit. He would give notes in the form of post-its and have them given to Goyer. If Goyer wanted to give him direction, he would have to send somebody to the trailer with some notes on direction, because he would not talk specifically with or to Goyer, the director. So there was just a lot of things on the set of that film to make it look like it was doomed from the start. And I mean, and we're talking about, they had Jessica Biel and Ryan Reynolds in that film, along with Dominic Parcells. So it was a film that you thought would have been guaranteed to succeed, but ended up being so bad that it basically killed the franchise after that, and they never made a fourth. It just stopped on the third. And then, you know, they were like, okay, well, that was a trilogy, and we can stop there.
Well, I mean, Wesley's career was on a string at that point anyway, and then he kind of sealed it himself shut. And, you know, unfortunately, like, if you really look at it, Wesley's career, he's had to work very hard to try to revive it. David Goyer obviously has, I don't want to say that he's obtained the same level of relevance that he did in those films, but I mean, he has penned or helped write or produce a number of very popular, well-known movies. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's tough from a personal standpoint of how to deal with people on sets like this, but I just don't think you should have a colossal meltdown like that unless it is absolutely necessary. And even then, it might be better just to move on and do something else.
Right. But let's not end this on a note like that. Let's end it on a good note. Darren, what was your favorite Wesley Snipes film?
I'm going to go with Major League. It's just because to me, Wesley doesn't really have a great movie, in my humble opinion. He has great performances in good movies. It's tough. It was between this and White Men Can't Jump. But White Men Can't Jump is still a little dated. It's still stuck in a time warp a little bit. Major League, I could throw it on tomorrow and still find it funny.
That's true. Major League is a great film. And it came in second to me, only next to my favorite choice, Demolition Man.
Yes. We have talked about Demolition Man in detail on this show before. But ultimately, you have won the argument because it looks like you're getting a sequel to Demolition Man.
Yay! You know, I'm sure we'll see another Major League at some point. Fingers crossed. So I wouldn't go that far. But yeah, I am excited about a Demolition Man sequel. I just think it's a little maybe they should reimagine it. I don't know. It's been a long time. It's like trying to do a Coming to America film and in the 80s and then try to do a sequel now. It just doesn't make sense.
It's a film that has. For me, and I enjoy Demolition Man, but if I'm just looking at the data points, it's like it's a bad film that has really good performances and really likable people. Like, I mean, you can't help but look at Sandra Bullock on the screen. Stallone is having fun. He has a lot of energy in it. Wesley Snipes is so colorful. And Dennis Leary is a nice cast touch to it with Benjamin Bratt. So yeah, I understand your love for that film. I always thought it was overrated, but I still like it. It is entertaining. But once again, we'll see what they do with a sequel.
Did I tell you, interestingly enough, a few years back, they did a Demolition Man themed Taco Bell in downtown, San Diego for Comic-Con?
You did not.
Yes, that happened. I did not get to go. Unfortunately, the line was too crazily long for me to get in there. But apparently, if you went to the bathroom there, they did have the three seashells. So just pointing that out.
With no instruction, probably, on how to use them.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure there was no instructions. But with that, that's going to be it for us. Again, I'm Donald here, and we have Darren on the other side. And we were here discussing Wesley Snipes, a little bit of history about him and his comic book world tie-in in Blade, and just some of his phenomenal work and what he's done. So thank him for that. And thank you, the listener, for tuning in. We are available on a number of platforms. We are available on Darren's favorite, which would be...
Sprecher!
Sprecher. We're also available on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on Spotify, on SoundCloud, and a multitude of others, as well as YouTube. So please tune in and subscribe to any of those platforms. We would definitely appreciate that. If you like this content, we do have much, much more content available online on those platforms as well that you can listen to. I believe the most content would be available through TuneIn and Spotify. They have a larger library of our work. We're also available on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find us on Twitter as well. Reach out to us on there if you have any questions or comments or anything. We're happy to talk to you and engage with our fans and just fellow listeners and fellow podcasters. We're always happy to talk. And so thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And perhaps when you're out and about, we'll see you
at the comic shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.